On today's podcast, take 13, Horizontal by the Bee Gees and The Graham Goldman Thing by Graham Goldman.
Trust the Wizards present Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s. Before going on tour with his band, Guided by Voices, in 2001, Robert Pollard recorded his favourite records onto 62 double-sided cassettes. Music from 1966 to 1971, from the best-known bands of the era to obscure, unheard-of psychedelic curios. The Wizards are on a mission to listen to and explore every groove. Kicker and Chorizo invite you to turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream as you listen to Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s.
So, it's once more unto the Bee Gees, dear friends, as we return again for our third episode in a row where we're talking about a Bee Gees album. This one is called Horizontal. It was recorded from July to November 1967 at Central Sound Studios, which is in Denmark Street in London, IPC Studios, which is in Portland Place near Regent's Park in London, and Chapel Studios, which is on New Bond Street in London. And it came out in February 1968. The personnel on it are the three Gibb brothers, Barry, Robin and Morris, on vocals, rhythm guitar, organ and keyboards. A guy called Vince Maloney on lead guitar, Colin Peterson on drums. Now, just to recap for you again from what we talked about on previous episodes, some important milestones along the way. This came out, like I said, early 68, recorded second half of 67. Pet Sounds was May 66, Sgt. Pepper, May 67. So this was being recorded just after, literally weeks after Sgt. Pepper had come out.
And it's their second album in terms of the world, the fourth album in terms of actually what they've released. But I think this is still a band, and I think you say Vince Maloney and Colin Peterson, I think they're quite key to the sound of this album because it does sound like a band.
It does, yeah, it does, and the music throughout the album is really good. I like it. The arrangements are really good. There's lots of good lead guitar bits. Music-wise, we talked last time about Odessa, and there was quite a lot of music on there that I think neither you nor I really liked when they were going off into the quasi-classical areas, or when they were diverting too much from what they're good at, and what they're good at being the poppy stuff, the ballad stuff, and the Beatles-y stuff.
That's right, and actually this album, which I would say is probably their peak for me, I wouldn't need to listen to another one. I like the first one, and I like this one. And then from then on, downhill. This album had two big hits on it. Massachusetts, which was a number one, all over the world, in fact. And World as well, which was, I think, got to number nine. I'm not sure if that's right. I think that's right.
Oh, right.
Number
okay. Nine. Yeah. I mean, Massachusetts is one of the most famous songs, isn't it? It was the second ever record played on Radio 1, apparently. Flowers in the Rain by The Move being the first. It was their first top 10 hit. It was their first number one song in the UK as well.
Yeah.
It is an interesting fact I found out about it. Well, I think it's interesting. Anyway, they finished recording this on the 17th of August. And on the 27th of August, 1967, Morris apparently played it to Brian Epstein, who told him that it was a great song and he thought it would be a hit. Now, 27th of August, 1967, have you got any idea in sort of Beatles timeline why that date's important?
Was he dead?
Yes, he died that day. Yes, Brian Epstein died that day.
Oh, he died that day?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, and given the account, some accounts of his whereabouts on the day that he died, you wonder if Morris has got that quite correct.
well, yeah, who can say? I found out about that song, that it was written, it was written for the Seekers. But they didn't think they were going to record it themselves.
None of them had ever been to Massachusetts. Just liked the sound of it because it had a lot of letter S's in it. Now, I was taught a rhyme when I was a kid. Do you know this rhyme? The word possesses more S's than any other word possesses. You know that one?
I didn't know that one. That's very good. I mean, I'm not sure it's true.
It's not true because Massachusetts has got five S's, which is the same number of S's as the word possesses. So the word possesses does not possess more S's than any other word possesses. Also, I was...
Hang on. Massachusetts, has it got five S's? Has it got four?
No, it's got two double... It's a double S near the start, mass, and a double S in the middle with the choose.
Oh, is it?
And one at the end. Yeah. I'm going off on a tangent early on, but talking of words with lots of S's in it, do you know the word a word that has more S's than Massachusetts and possesses? I'll give you a clue. If the things that you own are possessions, right?
Yeah.
If you have no possessions, then you are...
Possessionless.
Possessionless, yes. And if you are possessionless, then you are in a state of...
Possessionlessness.
Possessionlessness. That is right, my friend. 10 S's. Six. No, sorry. Eight S's in that word. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. So, I remember that song fondly, the title fondly, because I think it was probably Not the 9 o'clock News or something like that, one of those hugely satirical programmes that BBC put on, where they had whoever was doing the show, and the joke was, of course, that it was not Massachusetts, but massive chew sets, because they've got big teeth.
I remember that as well. I think that was Kenny Everett.
Was it Kenny Everett? Okay.
Yeah. I tell you something else I found out about Massachusetts, because I was listening to it and I thought it reminded me a lot of another song. And I thought, wonder where that song fits on the timeline. So I found out that San Francisco is in Are You Going to San Francisco? Be Sure to Wear Some Flowers in Your Hair by Scott McKenzie. Actually entered the UK chart at number 13 the very same week that the Bee Gees went into studio to start recording this album. And it gradually climbed the charts over the next few weeks, and it hit the number one spot on 15th of August. They finished recording this song on the 17th of August, and I definitely think you can hear the influence. I like both songs.
The lyrical content is sort of an antithesis to flower power in Massachusetts, isn't it? I mean, it's saying the opposite. So I wonder whether it was some sort of... What do they call them? The hip hoppers that you've got these days. When they put out a song, don't they, to challenge something that's been thrown down. I wonder if this is one of them, like a reply song.
Do you mean a diss track?
Is that what it's called? Okay, yeah, diss track. Yeah.
I mean, they're not really slagging. They're not saying, you know, to go to Massachusetts instead of San Francisco, are they? Really? Yeah. It's not like an either or situation.
No. But it's definitely not a flower power song. It's sort of mocking that a little bit, isn't it?
It is a bit, yeah. But anyway, I like it, in case that wasn't clear. It's not my favourite on the album.
Nor mine. Well, but it's the opening track on side two, and I would say that side two is very strong.
I think it's quite a consistent album compared to the other two that we've listened to, which are very patchy. I would say that there's no songs on it that I particularly dislike. There's little bits of songs here and there that I don't like, and there's as there has been on all these other Bee Gees albums that we listen to, there are some occasional clunky lyrics that jump out a bit and I find a bit jarring and take me out of the song. But generally speaking, I like the whole album. Musically I like it.
We've still Robin's voice, isn't it?
It's still Robin's voice, but I don't know if I've just become acclimatised to it. It doesn't upset me as much as it did on those other two albums that we've listened to. I think after just several weeks of listening to a lot of Bee Gees, it's beginning to pass me by. Although I have to say, on the last podcast when we listened to Odessa, and you told me that Etta James had done a cover version of Sound of Love, I went off and listened to that, and it's much better than the Bee Gees version. Yeah. And one of my favourite songs on this album is And the Sun Will Shine, but there's another version of it by Paul Jones out of Manfred Mann, which is musically very similar. It's just he's singing it rather than Robin Gibb, and it's much better. It's much better.
That song I don't particularly like on here, but I think it is because of Robin's voice. But I thought it would be great if Scott Walker was singing this.
Yeah.
It sounded like a Walker Brothers song to me.
And that's the thing that we've said repeatedly about a lot of these songs, isn't it? That they're good songs, but it would be good if someone else was singing them. But I don't think that as much on this album. Because, you know, there's quite a lot of Barry singing. And generally speaking, yeah. we've discovered that until he decided to go all silly and weird and high in the disco years, as you know, I would have said before listening to these albums that Barry's was the voice that I disliked the most out of the Bee Gees, and that for some reason Barry was the Bee Gee I disliked the most. But I've actually discovered that I like his voice quite a lot. He's got a good soulful voice, as we've discussed before. And again, in some of the songs, the one near the end, what's that called? The Change Is Made. Is really good on that. You know, is really, really good soulful vocal on
it. Don't you think on that one he sounds a bit like Van Morrison?
Well, Van Morrison's got that kind of soulful vocal, isn't he? It reminded me, we talked about one of the other songs, I think it was To Love Somebody, which was written for Otis Redding. And because of that song, The Change Is Made, it's the chords are quite repetitive, it builds, it creates an atmosphere, and it's quite reminiscent of Otis Redding records like Cigarettes and Coffee and Try a Little Tenderness, in that, you know, it just kind of repeats the same chords round and round at the end, with the vocals getting a bit more and more agitated. And I like that a lot.
There's a good lead guitar on that as well. And I think the guitar playing on this album is good.
Yes.
The songs I like the best all have really good guitar in it. My favourite song on it is The Earnest of Being George, which I think is the most guitar-y song on it.
Yeah.
But they sound like a band. And if you don't know that's the Bee Gees, I don't think you'd ever guess.
No.
Because it sounds like a sort of 60s... rock and roll song. Is it a flanged guitar? There's something going on with the guitar anyway, and there's maracas going on, and it stops and starts. But I think that's a great song. That's one of the two Bee Gees songs that I tend to put on compilations when I would do, you know, something for somebody who unexpected.
Yes.
A Bee Gees song in there. They thought, oh, fucking hell, that's the Bee Gees. And that's one of the two. The other one, of course, being Every Christian Lion Hearted Man Will Show You.
But yeah.
Those two, for me, are the pinnacle of the early Bee Gees.
Well, I like that song a lot as well. It's quite Beatlesy. It's a little bit Stonesy. The percussion on it is a bit Stonesy as well. I like that one. There's others I like more, I have to say. If I had to put money on before we started, which would be your favourite on this album, I would have guessed that you would have liked Lemon's Never Forget, because it's quite, it reminds me a little bit of Every Christian Lion-Hearted Man, and it's quite sort of mid-60s Lennon, John Lennon. Lennon's Never Forget. And the lyrics are quite interesting. And, I have no idea what it's about.
Do Lemons forget? I think they probably do. I don't think they recall. They've got very poor recall.
If they don't have conscious minds in the first place, then they aren't possible to know facts or store knowledge, so they couldn't possibly forget because they didn't know anything in the first place.
I see where you're going with that. That's very clever, yeah. Do you think that's what they're going with the lyrics?
I don't know. Because it says an apple is a fool, but lemons never forget. You know, if it's going to be a fool, surely it would be a raspberry fool, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yes. I like that one a lot.
That song, is that your favourite off the album?
It's one of my favourites. Yeah. Shall I tell you some more that I like?
Yeah.
I like Birdie Told Me, which is, again, is very Beatlesy. I tell you what I've noticed on this album, which, let's be fair, I criticised the first album for being too predictable. And with the first album, which we listened to at the same time as the Zombies album, and I compared the Bee Gees' first album unfavourably with the Zombies album, saying that the Zombies had taken a bit more inspiration from the sort of the 1966 and Pet Sounds and stuff, and they were taking chord sequences into places you might not necessarily expect them to go, whereas on the first album, the Bee Gees were definitely not doing that. It was all quite predictable, melodically and harmonically. Whereas, let's be fair, you know, I criticised them for that on the first album, so we've got to praise them for that on this album, because there's loads of harmonic invention on this album, loads of interesting chord changes, loads of modulation, and loads of stuff where it goes from major to minor in interesting ways. There's a few of those songs are the ones that I ended up liking the most. So Birdie Told Me is definitely one where it does that. and With the Sun in My Eyes is an interesting song. No drums, no guitar, no bass on it. It's just sort of orchestral instruments and a very insistent Hammond organ, long-held Hammond organ with some strings and a bit of harp. I like the lyrics there as well. I mean, mostly I don't really like the lyrics in most of these songs, or that they find them rather unmemorable. But here, who is the clown that walks in the steps of my shadow? Is it the man who does what he can but never does it right? There's some self-doubt in there, which I find appealing. I really like that one. I think I've mentioned all the ones I like. The only other one is Harry Braff.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on Harry Braff? I thought you might not like that one.
No, I do like that one. I think that's a bit of a mod stomper.
It is. It's kinksy, isn't it?
Yeah. And I particularly like the mad trumpet at the end of that.
Yeah.
That's one of my favourites on the album, definitely.
Yeah.
I just want to take you back to Birdie Told Me, by the way. When I was listening to that, as we do with these, we kind of have them in our heads for about a week or so. Well, I do anyway.
Yeah.
And I thought the thing to conclude from listening to that song, and it's all right, I quite like it, is that, Oasis, you remember them?
Oh, yes.
They were always accused, weren't they, of being Beatles copyists. And I think, actually, the band that Oasis really wanted to sound like was the Bee Gees on this song. That's their template.
Again, I would say that Oasis were never adventurous enough with their chord sequences, whereas that one does go to quite a lot of different places, that Birdie Told Me one.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Where do you stand on the title track, the last track?
I mean, the lyrics are a bit poor. I mean, it's this sort of this over the top psychedelic thing that they tend to go for, don't they?
Yeah.
That puts me off. And so it's got that, and the song itself isn't particularly psychedelic, I didn't think. Okay. Definitely not a favourite.
No, it's not one of my favourites either. But again, I just thought it was notable that I was playing around on the piano while listening to it, and it's notable how they've really progressed. And again, you think that's probably the influence of just getting better as writers, but also probably the Pet Sounds influence, because in that first two lines there are, and I've rearranged them into scale order to help you out. There are, I think, 10 chords. It's in the key of A, and it's got A major, A minor, A flat, A sharp, sorry, or B flat major, B minor, C, D, D minor, D flat, D sharp or E flat, F and G, and doesn't have E, which is the main chord you would expect a song in the key of A to go to a lot. The music is really good. It's sport a bit by the words, but it's catchy and it's pop, and you can sing along to it, despite the fact that it's that complicated harmonically. So
right.
That's quite clever, I think.
There's something going on, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, they were songwriters for other people, weren't they? That was kind of where they started. And actually, if they kept going with that, you'd have thought we would hate them less. Because it's the stuff that they did latterly that you think, oh, really? But I think overall, the side two I really like. Side two's got the songs I really like on it, and the ones that I think are probably the strongest ones.
Yeah.
I want to take you back to, before we sort of finish talking about this album, I want to take you back to the Really and Sincerely. What do you make of that?
I like the accordion. Again, it's Robin's voice, which I don't particularly enjoy, but I am a little bit past that. Do you know any of the backstory to that song?
Yes, well, that's why I wanted to mention it. So it's to do with this. He's written this. Robin's written this post train crash trauma.
Yeah, yeah.
Phenomenal! I didn't realise this story. So, did you know about this Hither Green train crash?
I've heard of Hither Green, but I didn't know there was a railway crash. But he was in it and survived, and 49 people tragically did not. And yeah, I mean, there's a. I read an interview with him that he did not long before he died. This is Robin Gibb, talking about it, and he was with his soon to be wife Molly. He was only 17, and it's a genuine near death experience, isn't it?
Yeah.
And this song is a reaction to it, although I can't pick up much in the lyrics.
I think that's right. It's a love song, isn't it? But
yeah.
More than that, I don't think it doesn't let you know that he's nearly died.
I think it's maybe the line, "Love is so easy to lose," that when you're in something like that, you realise how close you came. 11 of the 12 carriages derailed, and the one he was in went on its side. And he got broken glass tangled in it, and it took him days and days. And he says, "A piece of steel railway line shot through a window and passed by my face. If I'd been standing a couple of inches further forward, I would have been decapitated."
Good
so,
God.
You know, absolutely terrifying thing. So if something that can come out of that is, you know, a pretty song like that. Yeah, I mean, it's not my favourite on the album, and I probably wouldn't have anything to say about it were it not for the fact that we've both read that backstory.
Yeah, that's right. So you've been forced by me to listen to three Bee Gees albums.
Yes.
How would you rank them? Because this is the third one we've listened to. So we've had the first, we've had Odessa and now Horizontal. What order would you put those in?
Well, this one... comfortably the best. The best. The other two, I couldn't really choose between them. I gave them both the same mark, which was 4.5, because they were both very, very patchy. They both had some songs I liked and some songs I really, really didn't. But this one, there are no songs I dislike. There's some that I probably won't listen to again. And there's quite a lot that I really liked, and especially the music. Comfortably the most consistent of the albums. I would probably give it a higher mark if... I think the lyrics let it down a bit. The lyrics are largely fairly unmemorable, with the exception of Harry Braff, which I really, really like the lyrics in, with The Sun in My Eyes, and a couple of other exceptions. But overall, I'm giving this 6.5.
Wow. That's high.
Yeah, it is. It's like I say, the other two were 4.5. I mean, it musically, I could rate it higher. I really like the arrangements. I really like the playing. I really like the production, the choice of instruments. Inevitably, there's the problem with Robin's voice, but far less so than on the other albums.
Well, it's definitely my favourite one of the three as well, although it doesn't have my favourite song on it. I totally agree. I think it is overall a better album than the first one. Odessa, I don't really like. There's nothing much... I can remember from that, but I think, I need to listen to that. But yeah, she's a pretty good one. I gave it a 6. As you say, there's not really anything I hate. There's nothing some stuff is a bit forgettable, but most of it's either it's fine or actually I do quite like it. So yeah, I'm going to give it a 6.
Very good. So that's the highest mark you've given to any of the Bee Gees albums as well, is it, do you think?
It is, yeah. I think I gave the first one 5.5. And I gave Odessa, I think, 4.5.
Okay. So we can safely agree that if you listen to only one Bee Gees album, it should be Horizontal.
It should.
And maybe you should be Horizontal when you're listening to it as well.
Why not?
Yeah. Anyway, so talking of people who've written songs for other people. The next album we're going to talk about, I've got a list here of some of the hit singles that Graham Gouldman had before he made this record, which is called The Graham Gouldman Thing. So he had 3 consecutive hit singles for the Yardbirds, all in 1965, For Your Love, Heart Full of Soul and Evil Hearted You, which made number 3, number 2 and number 3 in the UK charts, respectively. September 1965, Look Through Any Window, which he wrote for the Hollies, went to number 4. And June 1966, Bus Stop, which for the Hollies again, number 5. February 66, Listen People, Herman's Hermit, which wasn't a single in the UK, but was a big hit in the USA, went to number 3. And November 66, No Milk Today, Herman's Hermit, as a UK number 7. And December 66, Pamela Pamela, was a number 11 hit by Wayne Fontana, and Graham Gouldman played guitar in Wayne Fontana and the Mindbenders for a while, alongside his future 10cc bandmate Eric Stewart.
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it? Because so all these versions had come out first, and in fact, there's another one. I guess it wasn't a hit, Another song that's been recorded by Glenn Gould on here, which he'd previously had recorded by someone else. I don't know if it charted, but Behind the Door was a single by Cher in the mid-60s, I think 66.
It was. It was. Hang on a minute. I've got it written down here somewhere. I think it was made 90-something. It got to 90-something in the US charts. It wasn't a single here. It was also recorded, originally recorded by a Manchester band called St. Louis Union, which wasn't a hit, although they it was a follow-up to their number 11 hit cover of the Beatles' Girl. That came out in 66. Interesting bit of trivia I found out about St. Louis. Have you ever heard of St. Louis Union?
No.
No, well, their teenage keyboard player, David Tomlinson, some years later found greater success in Magazine. He was known as Dave Formula by then.
Well, there you go. Because I've got this album. There's some quite good sleeve notes with it, including on the final page, the little booklet that comes with it. I've got it as a CD. And I think it's taken from the original release. I think it's from the back of the original vinyl album, where it lists, it says there are a great many artists who have paid tribute to Gouldman by recording his music. And you've listed many of them, but there are a few others which you should chuck in here. So the list includes, apart from what you just said, PJ Proby, I don't know what song you did for him, Burt Kampfert, Gary Lewis, Gene Pitney, Larry Williams, and The Shadows.
Right.
So there you go. So they all also recorded his songs. And the other thing that's in the booklet, which is basically the reason why he recorded this album, he says, if I may, I'll quote, he wrote these notes in 2004, and he says, I have special memories recording the Graham Gouldman thing. After spending the mid-60s writing songs for other artists, I came up with the idea of making an album of me singing and playing guitar. I like the idea of recording some brand new songs and reworking some old ones. And the real impetus for this album, I think, was the fact that, as he goes on to say, it was also a chance to work with John Paul Jones, who plays on this as bass. I think he plays bass and keyboards on this album, doesn't he? But he was a big influence on him. The album was supposed to have been co-produced by Peter Noon, who I like to think of as Peter No One, but no one likes that joke. But Peter Noon of Herman's Hermits, the idea being that the artist produces the writer, but after the first session he didn't show up again.
Okay.
So John Paul Jones and Graham Gouldman ended up producing the album with Eddie Kramer engineering. So there you go. So yeah, it's not all songs that he's written for other people. There are some new ones, if you like. But what did you make of it? You hadn't heard it before, I guess.
No, I've not heard it before. I knew some of the songs. Just going back to what you were saying about people who've covered it, I don't know the song by the Yardbirds, Evil Hearted You, but I do know Frank Black's cover, and I'd like to just take a second to recommend that to our listener. Evil Hearted You by Frank Black is a B-side of a CD single somewhere. I can't remember which one, but it's very good. Obviously I know Bus Stop by the Hollies. I know No Milk Today and by Herman's Hermits, and I know For Your Love by the Yardbirds. Yeah. Pamela, which was a hit apparently. I've never heard that before. And it's interesting, isn't it, what he does with some of those songs, because Bus Stop, for example, it starts off as being a more sort of baroque pop kind of version, doesn't it, with all the strings and stuff. John Paul Jones was known very, and still is known as a string arranger, still does work session work now as a string arranger for other people's records. And the arrangements of the strings and the woodwinds and everything like that are really good. But I like the version of Bus Stop when the band comes in, but I miss the guitar riff that starts and ends, you know, which is on the Hollies version. I like that. But as with a lot of the songs, it's the lyrics. You know, if the Bee Gees could write lyrics like Graham Gouldman, then they'd be far more interesting. The lyrics of this one really are. I've always liked the Hollies song Bus Stop, and the economy of the words is fantastic. It's two lines and 14 syllables at the start. Bus stop, wet day, she's there, I say, please share my umbrella. It tells a whole story. You could make a screenplay just out of those 14 syllables. I do like the version, but a better version would be to just add John Paul Jones's strings to the Hollies version.
Well, it's interesting, because I reckon you might have done the same, is that I did play these the song versions back to back, so you know, comparing the original, the first song that came out with the album version, this album version. I would say that I prefer this version, actually, and the reason for that is that I think the guitar is great, but actually it focuses more on the story. It focuses more on the lyrics.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, actually, I not only do I miss the guitar, I also miss the Hollies' harmonies as well. But actually, I still think it really works as a sort of pared down, focused song, even with the strings on it. I mean, it's still pared down, isn't it? And there's not a lot
yes.
of music going on. So, yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's a great song.
Yeah.
And so you'd have to do quite a lot to kill it.
The same with No Milk Today. I mean, I've always liked yeah. Herman's Hermit's version of No Milk Today, and his version isn't that different compared to, you know, Bus Stop, he changed it quite a bit, but his version of No Milk Today isn't really that different from Herman's Hermit's, but I do miss the vocal harmonies that were on the Herman's Hermit's version. But with that one, I couldn't really choose between them. I really like both versions.
Do you realise what impact his or the influence of his father had on those two songs?
Well,
are you aware of this?
I read a thing that, well, I should give credit, actually. I've mentioned before on the podcast a friend of mine called Paul, who is a very knowledgeable Beach Boys head. He also hosts a podcast which is called The Consequences, which is a 10cc-based podcast. And when I told him I was doing this album, he pointed me towards an episode where they interviewed Graham Gouldman about this album, and Graham Gouldman talked at length about his dad on there, and that his dad was, it wasn't ever his job professionally, his dad's job, but he was always keen on writing and used to be sort of an amateur poet and an amateur playwright and things like that. And over the years, an awful lot of the songs that Graham Gouldman wrote, he kind of maybe had an idea, or his dad had the idea first, and then they kind of collaborated on the lyrics. Graham always wrote the words, but there's a lot of collaboration to which, at the time, his dad wanted no credit. But I thought that's an interesting thing. I don't know of any other father-son songwriter partnerships, or I certainly can't think of any.
But as you say, it wasn't actually writing the song together. It was kind of the inspiration, wasn't it? So Bus Stop, I read that his father had that opening line that you were talking about. That was his father's.
Yes.
And he said, and then that inspired the rest of the song. And similarly, No Milk Today, I think the title was what his father gave him and said, you know, write a song based around this. So I mean, it's not so much collaboration, is it? It's just an inspiration. I think it's really cool. I really like No Milk Today as well. Again, I'd say I prefer this version.
I think on that podcast, he or somewhere else I read that he described his dad as the mechanic, or that was one of the nicknames they had for him, because you know, if he had a song and it wasn't quite fitting and it needed just a little bit of tuning up, you know, then and he carried on, you know, taking this advice from his dad throughout his career. And during the 10cc days, apparently Kevin Godley nicknamed his dad's first name was Jaime, and Kevin Godley nicknamed him Haim the Rhyme, because he was really good at coming up with, you know, interest. If they were stuck on a particular line or something like that, they'd take it to Haim the Rhyme, the kind of lyric doctor. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So
the other thing that pleases me about No Milk Today is that in doing a little bit of research, I discovered that that song was used in a Norwegian milk commercial. Which is excellent, isn't it?
Yeah. It's kind of sad, isn't it? Because it's like somebody's left. Somebody's wife yeah. or husband has left them. And that's why,
they need the milk.
Yeah, it's nothing to do with milk, really, is it? It's like...
Not really, no.
Yeah. So interesting choice for an advert.
Norwegians, you think?
Peter No One, he said that he thought that No Milk Today was Herman's Hermit's best recording, and this is a quote from him, it perfectly captures the moment and the feel of Manchester Terrace houses at the end of that era. I mean, he's woefully underselling the magnificent I'm Henry VIII I Am in saying that No Milk Today is Herman's Hermit's best recording. I've got a massive soft spot for Henry VIII I Am. In fact, I think I even made you play it on a podcast once.
Yeah, you may well have done.
Yeah, first verse, same as the... No, second verse, same as the first. The Ramones took everything they knew from that song. Anyway, I digress.
Yeah, Bus Stop and No Milk Today, two of the star tracks on this album, I think, for me. And actually, I'm going to throw in For Your Love as well. I think the version of For Your Love is really good. So it's got piano rather than the harpsichord, which, again, I think makes it better.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I've never liked the Yardbirds song For Your Love. And this version is better, but I don't really like it either. I like the chord sequence is quite interesting, but it just doesn't really excite me or go anywhere. I think I've always had a bit of a problem with anything that's got anything to do with Eric Clapton.
Well, Eric Clapton hated it, didn't he? Because he left.
I know, but it was on Eric Clapton's greatest hits. I think that's where I might have first heard it. And I don't like Eric Clapton as a person, and I've always had a bit of a problem with pretty much any music he's involved with. I know he's not. But I don't like it by association.
All right, well, fair enough. Let's move on from that. So, what's another one you like?
Oh, I like Behind the Door. I like that very much. And the cover version by St. Louis Union that I mentioned as well is also excellent. I'm not quite sure what it's about, but it's kind of like a births, marriages and deaths story, isn't it, I think, of you know, what's going on behind the door that you can't see in these... Again, it's kind of conjures up the images of sort of Manchester in the 60s and terrace houses and... Yeah, but it's the...
The whole album's lyrically strong, isn't it? This is another example of that. The guitar on it is great as well. I think particularly where it speeds up in the middle,
yes,
like a fast... Isn't it? That's really good.
Yes.
Have you heard the version by Cher?
No, I haven't.
Right. You really don't need to.
Right.
I mean, it's awful, and I can see why it wasn't a hit, because it's replaced all the guitars. There's no guitar in it. I think it's some sort of strike. There is a plucked instrument, but it's almost like a hoedown in the middle.
Right.
Then it goes fast, and it's awful, awful. But this is a great version, yeah. This is the one you want to hear.
Well,
another strong song.
The St. Louis Union version keeps that wonderful guitar riff that goes throughout it, that doom, 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 that bit, which is brilliant. It keeps that, but on the fast bit, they emphasise the kind of Bo Diddley beat of it a bit more than is on the... on the Graham Gouldman version. So, but they're both great. I like them both very much. There's only really For Your Love and Pamela Pamela that I don't like, but my other favourite songs are... I really like the last song, Chestnut, which is kind of... That is quite moddy. A mod sort of instrumental with lead guitar and Hammond organ driven, and it's almost completely... I say it's instrumental. It's not completely instrumental, because in the middle there's this really cool but quite weird poetry recital section where he says this little rhyme about if we were all doomed to die, and then if we just had a minute, I think I'd know what Anne and I would wish to happen in it, and you know, they'd hang around in this garden in Kensington, and that's quite nice.
It's got a funky guitar on this. I think we've got to say that.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I like that one.
It sounds like a little bit, sort of, well, like I say, a bit of that mod-themed The Barcaes or Soul Finger and that kind of thing, you know?
And it's a little bit different, isn't it, to anything else on it because of that. Because when I first heard it, I thought, oh, here we go, this is going to be an instrumental. And then the words come in. It's over a minute, isn't it, before there's any words in it. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Good one.
I thought that from looking at the picture of Graham Gouldman on the front, who does look a bit mod, I was expecting it to be more Small Faces-y than it is. By which I mean Small Faces, early Small Faces, rather than, wouldn't it be nice to get on with my neighbour Small Faces. The other one I really, really like, which apparently was the first single from the album, is Upstairs Downstairs. In fact, it was the first single and Chestnut was the B-side. Because it's very catchy, it's very poppy. It's got this lovely 12-string guitar riff that kind of acts as a call and response with the vocals in the verses. The lyrics are another really, really good lyric, which, like Bus Stop, they tell a romantic story in an interesting way of two kind of lonely people. But unlike Eleanor Rigby, for example, there's a happy ending here, like Bus Stop. Interestingly, I noticed that more than half of the lines in the song start with either the word upstairs or downstairs, which is interesting in itself as a sort of songwriting exercise. But yeah, again, it gets quite concise. It tells a very good story in quite a concise way.
I like the fact that the guitar in the mix is kind of over loud.
Yes.
So I think that sort of punctuates the song, doesn't it? So it's between the lines. So it doesn't stop you hearing the words, but it gives it an extra rhythm somehow. I really like that one as well. And on the first side of the record, the first song that's kind of a new song was Pawnbroker, which had John Paul Jones on bass on that. Again, great lyrics, although it does worry me where he has to pronounce trumpet as trumpet. That's a little bit annoying, but it's got a really good chorus. What I really like about it, though, is the fact that there's an opening doorbell.
Yeah.
Sets the scene, and then at the end of the song, the doorbell is playing backwards.
Oh, I didn't notice that. Yeah, it's quite fast, that one. It's got a bit of a flamenco feel, isn't it? But that electric guitar, which sounds like it's been recorded and then sped up, gives it a kind of balalaika.
Yeah.
Sort of slightly Eastern European feel as well. But again, the lyrics are fantastic. Trophies inscribed with my name in honour, medals for races that I have won, prizes for fights in which I was victor. So what the hell, I say, what's gone is gone, all is gone. He's taken it all to the pawnbroker. And that bit about the line about trumpets, guitars and pearly concertina.
Trumpets,
guitars, pearly concertinas, a sighing orchestra lamenting for wasted years. I mean, that's fantastic,
yeah.
Eric Wright.
That's great stuff. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. And the last one that I really wanted to mention, I mean, I think it's a great album. This is a superb album. But My Father I really liked as well. I thought that was a really... we're both fathers, and I think obviously our offspring are struggling to come out of our vast shadows. It may be a song that they should go and listen to, because it's a bit like... reminding me of Independence Day, Springsteen's Independence Day, in terms of the sentiment. And there's a sort of a twist in it, because you think it's going one way and it goes another way. I really like that one. And that sounded like a song that the Hollies should have recorded, actually. That of all the songs that hadn't been recorded by anyone else, that sounds like a Hollies song.
Yeah, it's very catchy. And it, like I say, in that podcast interview I read, his affection for his father and the influence of his father on his life and on his songwriting is very apparent, and that's a very, you know, I know exactly what you mean. You know, one of the we've discussed before about our dedication to Springsteen, a lot of it comes down to the fact that we are sons of our fathers, and that we are fathers of our sons, and all the baggage that brings with it. You've missed out a song as well. The song in between, Who Are They? I found that quite interesting. It's kind of like a waltzy one, and again, it starts off and you think it's being critical of, you know, a bit like sort of the Kinks, you know, when they're talking about Mr. Pleasant or having a go at the dedicated follower of fashion and the working man who wears his suit and goes to work every day. But it's kind of, again, because it puts their you, their me, their we in it, and it's kind of like, no, that's us. That's, you know, it's not talking about a them, it's talking about an us. Mm. But again, there's some very good lyrics in that one. There's very good lyrics throughout, let's be fair.
Yes, I mean, I think the only song we haven't mentioned is the opening one, The Impossible Years, which is another song recorded by Wayne Fontana. I don't suppose it was a hit, otherwise we'd know it was about it. I particularly, musically, that's got a great outro. I really like that. I think the Wayne Fontana version, which I didn't know but I have listened to, I think is better, because there's got loads of trumpets on it, which make it better for me. But it's still a great song, and as you say, throughout, there's no weak lyric.
I mean, it's not Graham Gouldman's fault, But the lyrics for that one, they are a bit, they have become a bit dated, because it's a song about a father talking about a girl growing up, and it sounds to our ears in 20, or to my ears at least in 2021, as a little bit dated and a bit condescending. But the music, the music is fantastic. But you know, it's 50 plus years old. So if there's one song where the sentiment has become a bit dated, that's you can't really blame them for that, and it's certainly a lot more enlightened than a lot of other bands were doing in the mid '60s.
As we've already heard, I mean, I think we both like this one.
Yeah. Well, do you want to go first with your score?
Well, I really like it. I think it's a great album, and I'm very grateful to Robert Pollard for making me listen to it, because it wasn't an album I was aware of until I found this list. It's an album that I enjoy listening to when I do listen to it. I'm going to give it an 8.
Okay. I think it's a very consistent album, mostly, but I don't really like Pamela. The lyrics are good, but I don't like songs. I think we've discussed this before when we were talking about the Kinks, maybe. I don't like sort of dink-a-dink-a-dink-a-dink 6-8 songs, generally speaking. I find them quite irritating.
Is it an oboe on that song, by the way? Is that an oboe?
There's certainly an oboe on the first, I think it's the first track. There's certainly an oboe on some of the albums. So I don't really like Pamela, and I don't like For Your Love, which lets it down a bit. But I really like Upstairs, Downstairs, No Milk Today, Chestnut, Behind the Door, and those other ones you mentioned as well on side one. So overall, it's a 7, because there are a couple of songs that let it down for me.
Okay, fair enough. Well done, Graham. I think you've come out quite well on that. All right, well, good. Sadly, that's the end of our Bee Gees trip.
We're off to California next, aren't we?
We are. It's time for the birds, and we're on the next programme, we're going to talk about Younger Than Yesterday and the Notorious Bird Brothers. And I think you probably know and like both these albums, but I look forward to hearing a bit more about that.
Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s is a Trust the Wizards production. You can find out more at pollard60s.com and on Twitter at pollard60s. If you liked it, then please subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts. You may also enjoy their other podcasts, which you can find at trustthewizards.com. Original music by the Malibu Storks. Kika Revelves and Chorizo Garbanzo are currently appearing in Waiting for Godot at the Mail Theatre in Leeds.